Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thanks. You order breakfast at the McDonald's drive-thru, tell yourself you'll wait to eat it at work, but it smells way too good. So you eat it right there in the McDonald's parking lot meal. There's a meal for every morning at McDonald's.
Right now, get any size iced coffee for 99 cents until 11 a.m. and pair it with your favorite breakfast sandwich or one of our tasty bakery treats. Price and participation may vary.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
My name is Dave Hanratty, and there will be no encore. Welcome to episode 105 of the No Encore Music Podcast. To my left, the handsome man himself, Craig Fitzpatrick.
Thank you. Complimenting my top as well before the show. This is great.
You're rocking a designer top today.
Yeah, Lacoste, which I've kind of ruined with Sprite Zero just before we came on mic.
Sprite Zero.
I'm waiting for the stickiness. Anyway.
Bon Jovi album, isn't it? Okay. And the other voice is not Cole Morrigan. It is, in fact, our great old friend, Selena Murphy.
That's me.
Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. I will question the existence of Colmar Regan again.
He's not happy, and here's why. Because, so, when I contacted Selena to come back to the show, you were kind of saying, actually, I'm not really doing the music journalism thing anymore. But my attitude is, once a music journalist, always a music journalist.
Sure.
True that.
These days, you're on the wedding beat.
Yes.
What's that about?
I am deputy editor of a website called One Fab Day, and anyone listening who is engaged will already know it. It is great crack, actually. Music somewhat involved in weddings?
You'd hope so.
Yeah.
Like, weddings are this strange thing. They're kind of an amalgam of every element of life, like fashion, beauty, music, everything. Yeah, it's great fun. My music journalism these days is basically making Spotify playlists for first dances and such the like.
What's the most frequently used song in those playlists? Not Ed Sheeran, I hope.
It's usually Billy Joel or...
Is this a request?
Bit of Stevie Wonder.
Does this come from them, or are you like, I'm going to curate this? Like,
We proactively do this for the readers. I think it's handy to have it all in one place.
Yeah.
And then you can look at the playlist and you can go, nope, 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 yes. Yes, yes, yes.
Billy Joel, Stevie, I think that works at a wedding.
It's Al Green kind of, is always a good one.
Yeah any good Motown, show. Any Stax would be great.
Who's bad?
Oh, so many songs that you think would be great and then you listen to the lyrics.
The
like,
Police, like, you know, Every Breath You Take.
Yeah, like Call Me Al.
And
it's
oh
like
my
his
God.
Wife has left him and it's just, I mean, you're probably not listening to the lyrics if you're on a dance floor or at a wedding.
Sure.
But there's always that fear. I think that's the, actually we need to do that less. We need to just go with the song and not worry that it's slightly creepy.
Well, again, it is this kind of weird serendipity that you had mentioned Cullum and not having met him, because he mentioned the same thing, because as it turns out, this is your third appearance on No Encore. And I think every time you were subbing for Cullum, just the way that the ball bounced, but Cullum is getting married.
Twice.
He's already been on my site then.
He's got two weddings coming up.
Two weddings in two different
countries.
He's
getting married in Norway and getting married in Ireland.
That sounds
so
delightful.
He was like, actually, this is the 1 week where I'm quite irked that I'm not going to get to be there when Cena's there.
Tell him, slide into the DMs. Ask me all of the questions. Ask me about venues.
It's two weddings.
Corkage, all of it.
Kind of overkill, though. I mean, they're not even that really in love.
It happens.
Let's be honest. I jest. They're a great couple.
They don't really care about each other. It does happen.
Oh, really?
It's a handy way of, like, if one... Yeah, like, in their case, she's Norwegian, right?
Yeah.
So it's a handy way
half of... Half Norwegian, half Swedish, I believe.
Of doing...
Like legal...
Two birds, one stone.
Hmm. Yeah, true.
Also, the legalities are... like fast and boring.
Yeah.
So I'm sure there's a legal reason as well.
Well, you mentioned being on a dance floor and not really caring about what's going on, because I have to presume that at that point the person in question will be three sheets to the wind, which I currently am. Thanks to
You're
today's...
You're holding it together really well.
Yeah, I don't
really
think I am. I'm
you haven't told us.
I'm catching myself thinking about it. So, and I worry because I feel like two podcasts ago I was like, oh man, I'm so hungover today, and now I've come to the podcast a little bit
people
drunk.
Getting concerned. Like,
people might think I've got a problem, but
no,
I don't think it's a capital P problem.
You have a fun personality, Dave.
So what happened was today I did a panel. They let me speak to students somehow in BIM, you know, the Brighton Institute for Modern Music, but the Dublin branch of that. And Kieran McGuinness, friend of the show, De La Renta's man, album out April 27th, I believe, which came up a lot today. He had a panel about broadcasting and radio and such, and it was myself, Kate Brendan Harding, Sinead Troy from Yanguru Music, John Barker, previous host of this show.
Yeah, did a fantastic
job. Yeah, we talked to some students and we had a good time and it was a lot of fun. And then afterwards, John was like, pint.
And to the entire student body. Come on, kids.
And then we had a few pints around the corner in Fallon's, and then... I literally had to leave here because he was like one for the road at like 10 past 6, and I was like, no, I have to go. I have to get to the podcast.
Very professional.
Got here
we appreciate
time,
it.
Thank you, Dave. Yeah.
However, while I was on the thing, and I worry that this is also becoming a bit too much of a thing, I did, in fact, throw Hot Press under the bus quite a lot. Our former stomping ground.
Wow, well, there'll be none of that here, given that the three of us previously worked for them at
not
length.
At all.
Yeah, I said lots of things about Hot Press. And apparently, I only learned after the fact that the whole thing was recorded, and we'll be going out.
Much like we're being recorded
I feel like this is public knowledge, your dissing of Hot Press.
Yeah, I guess all I will say is I very much enjoyed the opportunity to feel... quite out of my depth in a weird, you know, position where like I was sitting on the stage and they had like this kind of microphone angled in such a way that it was like a total singer songwriter setup.
Oh, okay.
But I think I won the crowd over early by noting that I'm a drummer and my drum kit was
my drum kit was
stolen recently, so I don't feel good about that. And I got a nice awe from the crowd, and then afterwards, you know, I just kind of did my own thing, tried to hold my own amongst people who were actually successful. So
come on, Dave,
were you there specifically to help the students kind of understand how to get coverage in the media, that kind of thing?
That was one of the aspects, yes. Yeah, very much so.
And helpful.
Yeah, it was good. Like, it was genuinely like different. I mean, it was not what I was expecting. The stage lights were very, very bright. But
those lights are so bright.
Yeah.
It was fun. It was
and
fun.
Now you're back here with us.
So thanks very much. And if anyone's checking out the podcast as a result, because I did my best to plug it, thanks for listening. Welcome to the show.
Excellent.
And as for the show, we will press on into the news, guys. So I guess we should say at the start of them, this is going to be a slightly unusual episode in that we haven't got an album to review this week because, quite frankly, there was nothing really good enough to do, was there?
Well, it's quiet out there.
It's quiet out there.
Everyone is on their Easter holidays early, I guess, or something. But yeah.
Two bank holidays this month.
Yeah.
That's true. Be it.
I worked bank holiday Monday. I was the only person working on Monday. It was insane. Holding down an entire website and its social channels for fucking
you've also
hours.
Done well, Christmas Day, which
yeah
is,
I have yeah. And a whole baptism of fire situation. Also, by the way, while I was working at the weekend, I did throw on the Editor's album from 2 weeks ago as kind of like a would this work, and like four songs in I was like, I'm not reviewing this album. Like, it's
you
just
couldn't cope,
couldn't handle it, man. No,
okay.
I couldn't do it.
That's fair. That's
and
fair.
We've been fairly receptive, but overall no. So we decided not to review like Yola Tango or whoever, and instead on this episode we are going to bring back the glorious No Encore Listening Guide. And we'll have a very interesting aspect and act to talk about in that.
Sure, yeah,
but
tease it out.
Let's jump into the music, and let's jump into 2005, because the news broke on Bank Holiday Monday while I was in the office, while I was working, that Bloc Party are going to play their debut album, 2005's Silent Alarm, in full at a string of exclusive European shows in October, 6 in total, one of which is in Dublin, in the Three Arena.
I don't quite get it. I feel like some of that Three Arena might be closed off for the show.
Tarped off.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's easy done though in the Three Arena. You can easily turn it
You can make it look good actually, when it's not in
you can turn. Take a good 5,000 people out of it.
Now, even if this was the original Bloc Party lineup, which it is not, I'd still be like, really? Because like there's this weird thing where like my brain saw the words Olympia Theatre three times, like as I was writing the story, and I had to go back and just triple check it. And I was like, oh no, it's not the Olympia, it's Three Arena, because it would make sense. Olympia would be perfect for this. It'd be, or even Vicar Street would be fantastic. 8,000 people.
Are they kind of banking on the fact that they are doing 2005's Silent Alarm, so that is the one that everyone loved?
But
and
also,
be like, finally, we won't get the weird electro stuff.
It's still with that weird lineup where they have like Justin Harris from Menomina and Louise Bartle, a drummer that the two lads who are remaining in the band found on YouTube. The last album they put out was Hymns in 2016, and I tore it to shreds on Drowning Sound. It's a horrific album. Block Party are very much one of those great diminishing returns bands, but like, I mean, at this stage, this genuinely feels like desperation.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, the scale of the tour is baffling, kind of. But, I mean, a lot of that generation of bands have kind of had baffling comebacks, and ones that didn't have the kind of critical early clout of, you know, a Block Party. I mean, we're kind of pretty close to getting the whole Cortinas is still going, but that whole kind of class of 2005, 2006 that were very landfill indie,
the Kooks, seem to be
making kind of big nostalgia. I guess people are just hitting their like late 20s, 30s and getting nostalgic for the teen years. Is that what's fueling it? I don't know.
Maybe, because I saw this and thought, that could be a bit of crack. I mean, literally, that's as much as I thought.
Yeah.
But I mean, I wasn't going to straight on Ticketmaster to buy a ticket.
I'll
probably go, but
I'll go in the...
It's a great album.
I'm slagging off to death now. I'll go
with my, like, you know, schmoozy guest list type situation, as opposed to
with
like
your critic hat on.
55 or 60 euros or whatever it's going to be. But I mean, okay, so I guess this is a good point as any to ask the question, because I feel like we've hinted and flirted at it on this show. Block Party, overall, good or bad? Or not even good or bad, but like, are they a good band? Were they a good band? Were they actually just hype, or were they great?
And is it that thing where you kind of start questioning the early work because of the, yeah,
the Enemy called them the saviours of modern Britain at one point.
Of modern Britain?
The
like the actual.
They say a lot of things. And now they say nothing at all.
Yes, that first album's great. Second album has a lot of good stuff on it.
Yeah.
And I kind of always respected that they tried to do stuff and like fell flat on their face sometimes, but they're always adventurous. They didn't want to just rest in their laurels, like do a kind of, you know, anniversary tour or whatever, 13-year anniversary tour of Silent Alarm, which they're now doing. But yeah, I kind of respected, I don't know, the effort they put in.
I think I enjoyed the first three albums. I think the fourth one I haven't listened to.
Yeah, that's probably fair, the first three.
But I interviewed Kelly before and he seemed like a top-notch guy, which is possibly clouding my judgment. But he also seemed like someone who wouldn't just like shite out an album. Like, he was very thoughtful about everything he did, and yeah, maybe, you know, have a big respect for them.
One man who does often shite out an album is Mr. Worldwide himself, Pitbull. He's like properly Mr. Worldwide now, because he's going to the United Nations, or not, as the case may be. We got a kind of very late update on this story. But yeah, actually, there's this other side to Pitbull where he's a bit of a humanitarian, and this is actually for quite a good cause. Like,
yeah, he was due to speak at the United Nations at time of recording about the global water crisis. He's heading up some kind of new initiative, which also has the likes of Pink and Maroon 5, Bruno Mars and others, trying to like just clean up the world, essentially. But you're telling me now, Craig, that there's some breaking news that he couldn't make his appointment in front of the UN.
Yeah, there's been more snowfall in New York. Apparently it's like the first time they've had this nor'easter, is that how you pronounce it? I've never heard this term before I saw the story, but it's like a kind of strange cyclone of cold weather at a strange time, basically. But he's apologized for not being able to do it, and he said, "Women raised me and made me a man. I've learned not to question them, especially Mother Nature."
Oh,
very strange. Wow. I did approach that.
Mr. Wokewise.
Am I the only one who doesn't get the name of the campaign? Clean Water Here, Cause Flash.
Yeah, I had the same problem.
What's happening?
I don't know,
like,
Cause Flash.
Like, is this like a misprint or something?
Possibly.
But I can't jumble it up to make it make sense.
I was extremely annoyed by this, just because I don't like Pitbull, and I was forced to review a couple of his albums back in the day, and I feel somewhat resentful about that. So I did some Googling about his philanthropy, but it's hard to tell with philanthropy, because is he one of these people who's like, oh, I don't want the credit, I don't want the credit. So it's hard to trace down what he's actually done in the past to like deserve to be, you know, promoted by the UN. But then if he's the kind of guy who's doing a campaign like this, he's probably not the kind of guy to hide his philanthropy.
Yeah, like he hasn't got it wrong on a spectacular level like Akon buying a conflict diamond mine or anything, has he?
Never forget.
No. My anger is definitely unjustified in this. If he wants to clean up the world, that's fine. Okay, I also... it's very vague. This is a very vague story. What water are you talking about? Are you talking about Flint, Michigan? Are you talking about an African country?
Global water crisis.
And drinking red level weather event. Bruno Mars, Pink, and Maroon 5 going to start like digging like canals and like water trenches for? I don't know. How hands on are they getting?
I must confess that maybe I've just been lucky, but I've managed to avoid pretty much the entirety of Pitbull's music career.
Yeah,
I'll send you a link.
Really?
Music career is a bit of a... It's amazing how when you try and focus on one of his songs, the lack of musical elements actually within it, it's a lot of kind of shouting and just... I know that sounds a very granddad-ish of me. It's a lot of shouting at Pitbull. But it's just like there's nothing actually at the center of any of his songs. It's just lots of kind of like flash lines about him being...
He's a drunk uncle on a dance floor.
Yes, he is. Yeah.
And he's usually always in tandem with like a J-Lo or a Mariah Carey or whoever, right?
Yeah, who I'm always a bit disappointed in.
J-Lo?
No, anyone who... Works collaborates with him. I'm always a bit like, you know, you see it come up on YouTube or whatever, and you're like, oh, Jay, oh.
Yeah. FT Pitbull.
I can't possibly, I've been burned in the past by Pitbull.
Some people love him, though. Like, they really like think that this guy's the thing.
Yeah. All Freddie Mercury songs of modern have age. The same theme, which is that, like, I've got a girl in every port, which, like, was a thing in the 50s. And I don't know if we need to
big
go
in the
back
50s,
to there.
Yeah, and actually, I think there's a video on YouTube where it just isolates his vocals, which are always kind of funny. But even with him, it's not just, like, out-of-tune stuff. It's just him kind of grunting occasionally and saying, yeah, Mr. Worldwide, yeah. Like, that's it. That's all he does on stage.
Okay, well, someone who was around in the 50s is Queen Elizabeth II.
She was alive as you or I.
His 92nd birthday is coming up, and she's throwing a bash. And for her 92nd birthday, she will receive Sting and Shaggy.
I love the way that's phrased.
I take issue with that sentence.
It's such a bad sentence, right? Jesus Christ.
You could have read it a different way, Dave, but I've, you missed your chance.
What can I
Sting
say?
Sting and Shaggy sound like some kind of kids' TV characters, don't they? Like Zig and Zag or something. It's just like, it's the Sting and Shaggy. Sting and Shaggy.
Yeah, it's very Scooby-Doo. Yeah.
It's adorable.
So they have an album coming out, as we know. And a day after they release it, they will be among the performers slated for her birthday concert at the Royal Albert Hall. 21st of April, other stars from around the Commonwealth on the bill include Kylie Minogue, Craig David, Sir Tom Jones, and of course, Ladysmith Black Mambazo. Be broadcast on BBC TV and radio. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, I feel like if I was 92, I'd want a better fucking bill. Kylie, fair enough. Sting and Shaggy. Really?
Yeah.
Tom Jones?
I don't kind of think these concerts are tailored to her specifically. It seems to be like whoever they can get and, you know, have a cross-section of artists that are popular. Yeah.
I can't process the fact that Sting and Shaggy are doing an album
together.
It's so good.
I listened to the single
this morning or whatever it is, and it was just not even necessarily, it was like terrible or offensive or anything. I just can't. Like, they can't coexist in the same music video.
I was sent a 6-track album sampler about a month ago, and I gave it, like, one listen while I was at work, and I can't quite remember, but, like, Sting is going for it. Like, he is going for it lyrically.
Wow.
He's, like, kind of, like, he's getting well into it. Like, he's getting into character, and he's, like, kind of referring to, like, you know, hip-hop and reggae, and, like, you know, coming from this great Caribbean sound. And I'm like, you're the whitest guy in the room, Sting.
Yeah, well, they've, you know, the Police always had those influences.
God, reggae.
I'm going to stop defending him. But actually, I thought, like, when I heard some of those songs, it's the most enthused Sting has sounded in years. Like, Shaggy really seems like Sting's new muse or something.
I'm not opposed to either of them making an album or making 1,000 albums, but together there's something fundamentally disturbing to me about that.
Yeah, there's a sleaziness there,
it's like,
isn't there? There's an ooze.
A TV show crossover, and it just feels a bit wrong. You're like, why is this person in this living room? Shouldn't be happening.
Yeah.
Elsewhere, Craig's boy has had a good week himself, hasn't he? Ringo Starr.
oh, he has finally been knighted for services to being the funniest person in the Beatles, I guess. He received the honour from Prince William, Duke of Cambridge, at Buckingham Palace. Speaking with the BBC, Ringo said, "It means a lot, actually," he continued. "It means recognition for the things we've done. I was really pleased to accept this."
That genuinely sounds like that thing where it's like, you know, will robots write articles in the future?
Yeah.
It's the most unenthused robotic response
of all
time.
It's very odd. I'm always a bit disappointed when, like, rock stars accept knighthoods, because it's a bit like, come on, mate, don't join the system.
He's the voice of Thomas the Tank Engine.
Bowie turned it down.
He was in the system long ago, okay? Yeah. But yeah, he didn't even throw out, like, a fucking peace and love, you know? Like, I mean,
yeah,
he didn't seem to care.
Maybe they just thought everyone will assume he ends with that, so we won't include it.
Sir Ringo Starr. So it's been like, it's been a long time coming.
Yeah, I suppose so. It's weird how some people are kind of overlooked with it, and then, of course, there's a long list of awful, awful people that have got it. So, yeah, I don't...
A long list of people who've turned it down as well.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah. I think John Lennon turned it down. I don't know. I mean,
to me, personally, it's meaningless, but what has meaning is the royal wedding, which is happening 3 weeks after this concert. So,
yeah.
Personally, I think the Queen's thunder is going to be way stolen for this gig.
So there have been rumours, by the way, that Ed Sheeran was going to play at that wedding on, like, the same day that he's playing Dublin. He's playing Dublin, like, before.
Well, Mel B has said that her and the Spice Girls are reforming to play the royal wedding. Have you not heard this?
No.
Yep.
Wow.
She, it, like, blurted it out on a TV, like, on live American television. Yeah.
I will say this. Just so excited, yeah.
As someone who, like, you
I
know...
I mean, it's exciting.
I, to be fair, you know, like, professionally, you cover weddings, so, of course, this is obviously a big deal. I tend to just not really pay attention to these things, and not out of any kind of snobbery, I just don't really pay attention to it. But I will say, I did see a clip this week of Harry and Meghan in a church where Liam Payne was performing. And, like, I don't know why, I don't know what was happening, I don't know whose confirmation it was or what it was, but at the end of it, the camera, like, cuts to the back row as Liam Payne finishes his really bad turn, and, like, Harry, like, throws her this look of, like, oh my god, that was fucking terrible, right? And they start giggling. So I was like, you know what?
They're super cute. Like, they seem cool. There's no denying it. They're cool. Yeah.
Imagine being royalty and having to go to so many dreadful events.
Yeah, and like, just, looking at life. Things and, like, and, here's yeah. our plant where we make chewing gum, like, yeah. over and over and over again yeah. for 100 years.
I guess
not
for
me.
Sting and Shaggy is an upgrade over Liam Payne.
Sure.
I was just... Okay, so I've said before on this program that I used to not pay for Spotify, and then the ads became so annoying that I threw down that tenner a month. YouTube is basically going to follow suit now. They plan to increase the number of ads seen by people who use the service to listen to a lot of music in order to encourage them to buy paid subscriptions. And the way that they've phrased this is they intend to frustrate and seduce people who treat YouTube like a music service, passively listening for long periods of time. So there
yeah.
you go.
They followed up with, "You're not going to be happy after you're jamming to Stairway to Heaven," and you get an ad right after that, which is true. Yeah, when I'm jamming out to Stairway to Heaven.
How do you do, fellow kids?
Yeah. Very nasty tone to that sentence. It's like, yeah, we'll show you guys.
It is a bit. But this is clearly them, like they've said that it's an effort to be good partners with the music industry. And
make money, basically.
Well, yes, but also...
Off.
I don't know. I do feel like a lot of... Like, when you've got entire full albums up on YouTube, it seems a bit much, right?
There's that weird workaround where I've kind of found it every now and then, even with the show, where I'm, like, looking for a song on YouTube, and it's like, people can put up a song and they can pitch shift it, and therefore it doesn't actually, like, you know, break any laws. There was a weird situation where, like, Hannah Hunt by Vampire Weekend, which is an amazing song, the only iteration of it on YouTube for, like, 3 months after that album was kind of circling around. I think, you know, we had review copies of it or whatever, maybe my link expired, and I was like, I want to hear that song again. And on YouTube, it was this horrible, like, high-pitched chipmunk vocal. And in the comments... people are like, amazing song. And I was like, no, this is terrible. Like, this is not the song. They've destroyed everything. They've destroyed the entire thing.
They did have a lot of chipmunk vocals on that album, though, in fairness. Not on that particular
one.
Yeah,
hey.
Yeah. So, I mean, it could have been a
so
daring
So, are you
going to
pay for YouTube, guys? That's the question.
No.
I don't pay for Spotify on principle.
Because I'm
anti-Spotify.
Really?
Do you use Apple Music or like what's
no,
your...
No, I buy like 2 albums a year. No, maybe like 5 to 10.
Wow. CDs, vinyl, cassette? What's your...
Not cassette.
All
right. CDs A-track. For the car. Like iTunes, whatever, on my phone for walking around.
Yeah.
And vinyl as well.
Wow, what a way to live.
Yeah. Sounds like Selena's got it all figured out.
And this is why this is relevant, that I'm not like going to my boyfriend in the evening, oh, did you hear this song? And throwing on YouTube and turning it up. And, you know, yeah. I am using YouTube to listen to things.
Yeah. I mean, it's handy enough. And I wrote an article last week where I was saying like how people who give out about festival lineups and, you know, would rather crow about not knowing who the artists are than in fact hopping onto a platform like Spotify or Apple Music and paying the price of 2 pints a month. But I was like, hey, if you don't even want to do that, just hit up YouTube. But now, obviously, YouTube saw what I wrote and are like, hey, listen.
Want some of those clearly. Spotify millions.
They want some of those Dave dollars. But yeah, it's frustrating because there are instances where there are only some songs on YouTube that actually don't make it to the other platforms and don't even make it to physical releases as well, where it's like, for whatever reason, this popped up on YouTube 2 years ago and they've never like put anywhere else. So
yeah.
I don't want some fucking, you know, wacky guy popping up 2 minutes into my Dillinger Escape Plan Happiness is a Smile song.
It would kill the vibe, yeah, very much would.
I mean, I think they're already doing a version of this on playlists and stuff, aren't they?
I think so. And of course, you do have, if you don't use ad blocker, you will be subjected to a lot of ads as it is.
Yeah.
You know, like a 30-second breakup. Which
they're going to turn this into a big whole annoying thing. Like, that's basically what they've said in this statement. Yeah, so yeah.
Don't you mean frustrate and seduce?
Yeah, which is strange. They're going to turn this into a big old frustrating and seducing thing.
Metallica album, yeah, it's strange. So yeah, social media, I guess, is on the agenda this week. Did any of you watch the Channel 4 Cambridge Analytica documentary about the Facebook whistleblower?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
No, but I read the Guardian piece.
It's quite the piece.
Yeah.
I love how the guy involved...
It's head-spinningly crazy.
It really is. But I love how like the poster boy for this looks like a Vice article.
He does. He looks like he's dropping a mixtape.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
He's got like fucking like red, like blood red dyed hair. He's wearing like a camouflage jacket. He's got piercings, all this kind of stuff. You know,
he was ready for that photo shoot. Like, he was not sleeping on the photo shoot.
Unbelievable. The photo shoot is so well done. It's too well done.
It's gorgeous. Could be an album cover.
For a whistleblower.
Maybe that's what he's after.
So if
he wants to drop that mixtape.
If anyone doesn't know what we're talking about, basically, long story short, Mark Zuckerberg's plans to not sell your data didn't go according to his plans because he did sell your data. Oh, he claims it was, you know, some professor in Cambridge is the guy who like fucking started this whole problem. And long story short, Channel 4 New York Times did a joint expose in which they kind of called out this data consulting firm and how they harvested lots of people's information to rig elections and influence elections across the world, particularly obviously the Trump one. So there is a kind of fun, no encore friendly side product to this though.
Thank God.
In that, science has decided that if you're a fan of the Smiths, you're probably neurotic. If you're a Bjork or a Tom Waits fan, you're more likely to be open to new experiences. And if you're a Marilyn Manson fan, you're probably not very agreeable.
Now, as the man that did the Marilyn Manson listening guide not too long ago, what you make of that?
Well, okay, it's interesting because all this is based on what people have, you know, quote-unquote liked on Facebook and so on over the course of a few years. And I did say off mic, I was like, just double-checking that Selena was a big Bjork fan because I thought you were. So you're a Bjork fan.
Yeah.
I would say that you're open to new things.
Yes, I mean, I'm on this podcast.
There you go. Craig, you're a Smiths fan?
Yes, I'm probably neurotic. Yeah, it's been well established.
And I'm a Marilyn Manson fan, and not very agreeable.
I mean, I'm also a Bjork and Tom Waits fan, so is that what does that mean? I'm like...
You must be...
No, you must only be one thing. You must be... Facebook wants you in a box, and you must stay there.
I did like the fact that no musicians appeared on the least neurotic list, which is kind of telling
just
about
Sports Center and other sports related
they're all so stable.
Yeah, this is about a 2015 study that used a Facebook app called My Personality, a 100 question quiz developed by the Psychometric Center that assessed a person's openness, consciousness, extroversion, agreeableness and neuroticism. And 70,000 people did the quiz. As a result, the guy who ran it was able to like just rinse all this data and essentially build character profiles. So yeah, I guess the happy side of this is that, you know, like people who are into music are now being like put into this weird kind of grouping. I did like how the least open people liked Luke Bryan, who I believe Cullum is a big fan of Luke Bryan. And I guess now we can finally nail that to the mast, his emotional rigidity.
He's a close shop, yeah. Inscrutable.
Least agreeable people also liked Rammstein and Placebo, which I do like. Judas Priest, which I don't like. I wouldn't agree with that.
Most extroverted, Gucci Mane, which is, yeah, I think that's dead on, right? You're just blaring the Gucci.
If you're going to get a fucking ice cream tattoo on your face, like, that is fairly, you know, outgoing.
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know. I do you guys put any stock in these kind of things?
No, not at all. Because, like...
A new study has found?
Yeah, I mean, what does the app actually kind of... How can you mine this data and apply it so specifically to the real life personalities of people. It doesn't. No, I don't.
Over 50 million Facebook users can't be wrong. Yeah, right?
It probably refers more to your Facebook consumption habits than anything else. I'd like to think whether, you know, you're going to be rude to a waiter or not, which is kind of what they're implying here, is that like Dave would be, I would be like, I don't know, off staring into a chandelier somewhere, and
I'd be just kind of not paying attention to the waiter and being like,
I'm not sure if I really want to eat beef at the minute because of the ethical. Like,
that's me. That's me entirely. I'm not eating beef at the moment because of ethical.
As someone who worked in retail for 10 years, I have to say, I'm very much into the waiter rule. I think if someone's rude to a waiter, if you're on a first date,
it says a lot about that date.
Yeah, so, if someone clicks their fingers at bar staff, no.
Oh, God, that's the worst. Yeah.
It's bad.
I don't feel like this study is at all applicable to the waiter rule, so I'm throwing it in the bin.
So the waiter rule trumps this.
Yes.
All right.
That decides whether you're a good person or not.
Yeah.
Case closed.
I like to think that anyone who listens to the show is very nice in a restaurant situation.
Oh, I'd say so, yeah.
No matter how bad the service is. Speaking of bad service, we're going to move into our listening guide. Craig Fitzpatrick, deal us in.
Yeah, so this is very much my area of expertise, I would say. It's the Strokes, who I'm occasionally mocked about when I'm defending Julian Casablancas more recently.
It's a good follow-up to last week's story. Did you read that Julian Casablancas interview?
I did.
What did you think?
It was so very interesting. Times I was like, yeah, right on, Julian. And times I was like, okay, you need to just dial it down like 1,000. Yeah, there were moments where I thought he had a good point, and then my overall feeling, which is really bad, I shouldn't admit this, was like, you don't have a lot going on in your life. Like, he just seems like he's obsessing over things, and like, do you not have dishes to be doing, or like floors to be hoovering, or like posts to be posting? Like, you know, he seems to have been given the mental freedom to obsess about this stuff, whereas the rest of us probably don't have that time in our hands.
And I think he's been grappling with that kind of stuff in his own career, just from, you know, feeling a bit, I mean, the Strokes story hasn't exactly been completely smooth sailing, and he's had, you know, there's been bickering amongst the band in terms of what direction they should go in. With the Void stuff, he's clearly just kind of getting a bit more experimental. He feels really free at the moment, and this is his kind of...
But then you go back to a song like 11th Dimension, which is an incredible pop banger.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, lyrically I was like, oh, I didn't notice that line before. I guess it's about some kind of...
That's my overall theme with the Strokes, is like, miss the point of that song, miss the point of that song, until like I had to sit down and listen to it for the purposes of this
podcast.
Here
we go. Like, no better way to go into our top 10 songs by the Strokes. That is the form that our listening guide has taken up. And Craig Fitzpatrick will lead us in with the first, the number 10, rather.
Yeah, I think fittingly for us, we're starting with a 2004 B-side. This is Modern Girls and Old Fashioned Men. Now, this is a bit of a kind of departure, certainly for the Strokes at the time, and a bit of a one-off in that it's Julian duetting with Regina Spektor. It's got a real old-timey kind of croonerish vibe to me, but just over that, you know, very Strokes backing of the time. And I thought that was an interesting blend, and it's a class song. What do you think, guys?
I really like it. I really like the energy of it. And I was talking to someone about this last night, and they were kind of like, oh, I don't think it's representative of the Strokes at all. And I was like, well, that's kind of the beauty of it, isn't it?
Yeah.
But again, it does feel like he's off the leash, and I think that they interplay incredibly well. I wouldn't be the biggest Regina Spektor fan in the world. I do find her a bit much sometimes. But I very much liked how they almost were passing a baton to each other as the song kept going. And I almost felt like there was a bit of teeth in it as well, but they're obviously, you know, they'll go for a pint afterwards.
Sure, yeah. I like those kind of intertwining melodies. I mean, you've two kind of great vocals happening simultaneously, but then kind of sparring with each other. Lyrically, it's interesting as well. And yeah, it is, but it is very much representative of, in terms of the music, the Stroke sound of the time, that kind of twin guitar attack. It is completely New York, but just with this interesting vocal thing going on.
This one's an anomaly for me because I like, if it was up to me, this would have stayed as the B-side that nobody listened to. Like, I'm not, I wasn't one of my picks. Like, don't love it. Love Regina. Not sure why I'm not feeling it. Just didn't connect with this one at all at any point. Even though I did revisit and listen to it this weekend for the purposes of this podcast, couldn't grab onto anything.
Well, we should say that, like, we ended up, the way that we did this was we kind of threw our own top fives against the wall and saw what stuck, and it led us to this weird position where, like, we had no number 10, and then there was a couple that we went back and forth on, and then Craig was like, I think it'd be cool to go with the B-side and be esoteric.
That explains how it ended up in there.
I thought it would be nice to kind of, you know, if a lot of these songs are, of course, because of the Strokes fame, well known, so
it's a very hit-centric list otherwise.
People kind of, check this out, and it could be a bit Marmite, but
I will say, and I want to give a shout out to the great music journalist Tara Joshi, who this week got in touch with me because on Twitter I was like, give me your top five Stroke songs, and a lot of people got involved, and she like messaged me and she was like, that's just way too hard. But she brought up a song which I actually never really kind of properly listened to before, and it's off Come Down Machine, and the song is Call It Fake, Call It Karma. It's the closing track.
Yeah, it's interesting,
and that has that crooner thing going on, and it has another female vocal in there as well in this kind of old style, almost like, you know, he's got a gramophone in the background or something.
Yeah,
and it's a fucking magical song.
Yeah. I loved that one, and it's kind of doing like a Hawaiian Elvis moment.
Yeah, like totally, a Perry Como thing.
But I think probably the reason why people didn't latch onto it was because it was so out of character
it
for
really
them.
Is,
and they, like, the Strokes don't do out of character. They don't take a crazy...
They have like bursts on kind of albums here and there. And yeah, I think for the exact reason you're saying, people just kind of breeze right past it, even though it's kind of interesting detours. I don't know.
Well, speaking of interesting detours, number 9, the closing track off Angles. This is Life is Simple in the Moonlight. As I watch the few things about this song. I was very taken by it when I first heard it, and I still am now. It's a strange situation. It almost reminds me, in a strange way, and please stay with me on this, of Nine Inch Nails' Hurt, because the reason I make that comparison is at the very end of Hurt, when it does that like crash out, I'm always like, I don't like that bit of the song. I think you had it and I didn't think it needed it, but I understand why it's there. The vocal on this one, I think his chorus vocal is one of his most interesting and strongest, and then he has this kind of weird like sidebar thing where he's like, you know, no one can stop us, get out of the way. Yeah. And I don't love that vocal, but the preceding vocal I adore. And also, the preceding vocal I think is like his most Phil Lynott vocal. There's a weird Thin Lizzy-ness to this song, and I'm not a Thin Lizzy guy. Why do I love this song? I don't know. It just works on me.
Yeah, there's another track, Gratisfaction, which is very, very Lizzy around that time. So, and they've talked about being massive Lizzy fans. Yeah, I really like this. It has a kind of glacial but calming thing. I think a lot of those synth sounds would become like his kind of Phrases of the Young solo stuff taps into this tone quite a lot, and it's kind of melancholy but tranquil. And it's interesting how some of the latter day Strokes tracks might just crop up here.
Very much so. Let's have one more.
This is from Angles, right?
Yeah, which is a weird album.
So is the next one, I believe, number 8.
It is. Let's have a listen. Remember yours and someone else's voice. This is Machu Picchu, which is like tropical Strokes, but it works.
Yeah,
it does work.
It's got a stomp to it. It's kind of got good acceleration to it. It's a bit beefier than a lot of stuff they did prior to this. They actually talked around the time of First Impressions of Earth about how the first two records they always thought was a bit small sounding, and they made a real concerted effort thereafter to go big with the production, and this is a kind of a proper rock jam, I think, and I love the lyrics on it.
Why?
There's some great, just like, the thing about Julian Casablancas is he's not going to write some like Dylan-esque, you know, piece of genius, but there's lines here and there every so often that just, even if they don't really quite mean anything, they capture a feeling or they capture a great image, and yeah.
There's a flash of genius always in every couple of songs, for sure.
I like the bit where like he basically just decides to just sing the melody, and it almost seems like he was in the studio one day and was like, fuck it, I'll just sing the melody as well. And like that'll be part of the chorus, part of the kind of the breakdown. And it's that kind of just like playground thing he's got going on.
They sound like they're having fun, which I don't think they were around this time.
No,
but
they
it's
weren't.
Kind of
this album was done like all via email.
Yeah,
like it was just, all disparate.
You'd never
parts
guess from
and,
this
like,
song.
Not hanging out with each other, not really talking to each other, and like just firing over ideas and MP3s. Which, like, I guess, you know, it's a strange album. It's obviously not their best album by a long shot.
Yeah,
but the hits that work really fucking do. And you're like, how did you even get that from this strange fractured situation that you had with the band at the time?
Yeah, and you're a big fan, as am I, of Undercover Darkness, which is kind of a nice 1-2 punch with this. It's a great start to the record. That track is more old school Strokes. Although he
for
does,
sure, yeah.
This is when he started doing that kind of slightly strange high pitched vocal.
Very much so, yeah.
Which and Undercover Darkness is kind of slightly out of his range.
When that first came out, it took me a long time to get with that song. But like, I think it actually holds up really, really
well.
Yeah, it's
over a jam.
Time.
I believe we were repping it in the Hot Press office at
we
the time.
Were, yeah, very much
on
so.
On the regular.
Let's go back a bit further in time. This is from Room on Fire, and The End Has No End.
Now, Craig, Room on Fire, in a recent, I guess, summary of the Julian Casablancas interview, like, I don't know who it was, but someone, maybe it was Pitchfork, but like, someone kind of made the claim offhanded. They were like, you know, like, over time, I think Room on Fire might actually be their best album. How do you feel about that?
Ooh, no, I disagree. I don't think the songs are quite as strong. I think it definitely got a rough time because people felt it was a bit more of the same, but it's a cracking album. It's like I can't really find many faults with it as a standalone piece.
It's a weird one because I remember like seeing like the, you know, the five red stars in Q magazine at the time, and like, it was very much like, obviously this will get the best reviews because the Strokes are just the hottest thing in the world right now. And yet it didn't really develop conversation. It didn't really like lead to any kind of great, like, I remember, like, you know, my brother-in-law when he got Is This It being like, oh my god, man, you have to hear this album, it's amazing. And then Room on Fire comes out and he was like, oh yeah, there's a new Strokes album. I don't know what it was. I feel like it's so dismissive of me to refer to Strokes as a flash in the pan band. I don't think that's what they are. But I think they never quite got that lightning bolt again.
Yeah, I think I remember Fab Moretti talking about how he felt they should have led with Reptilia as a single as opposed to 1251, which is a cracking song, but maybe a bit more low key. And they just felt the whole even approach to marketing it was a bit off. It was just one of those, I think, poor timing things where people were going to go, oh, no, they're just doing the same thing again. But there is nice updates to the sound there. It's a kind of subtle progression, but it's a great, great record.
I know I don't even have to ask that if you were queuing up on day one to buy it. I assume that you were. Selena, what about you? What was your kind of Strokes around this time?
My Strokes experience is purely listening to it on dance floors in the student bar and in Whelan's, hence why I barely listened to any of the lyrics.
Yeah.
So I kind of missed them. It was like 2005. So these two albums had already come out and I was like, oh, it's basically just one creation, which I think maybe that's why in retrospect Room on Fire isn't getting loads of love, because I think Is This It came out, people loved it, people went mad for it. Room on Fire kind of gave them more of what they liked about the first one, and that's actually quite rare with a band where you could almost say it was the first album part two. And I mean, I think people were generally happy about that, but in retrospect it's kind of, it all meshes together.
Yeah, maybe it kind of pales just in the shadow of that kind of, you know, stunning debut that just came out of nowhere. But if it had been the case that it took, you know, 5 years for Room on Fire to come out, you could go, okay, this is disappointing. But as you say, because it was such a quick follow-up, it's just like, yeah, they were just in a real kind of
what
early
what else do you want,
patch.
Lads? Fantastic. Like, here's like, loads of more, like, banging tunes for
I
you to dance
to. Straight away,
off you go.
In many ways, the thrills of their day. Selena mentions 2005 there. That, of course, is when their third album landed, First Impressions of Earth. I was working in Extravision at the time, and I championed this album quite a bit. Here is the opening track, You Only Live Once. Which I fucking love, by the way. And it's got a great video, too, in which they drown themselves.
Yeah, they do drown themselves, yeah.
Weird how their videos, like, got progressively weirder.
They did.
As years went on. Like, at the start, it was like, we're not into the frills. We just want, you know, very straight-up
performing, yeah.
Videos, and then they lost around themselves a bit.
They did a bit. But this is a classic Stroke song. That guitar riff, that just, like, chiming little thing.
Yeah, it's classic.
Yeah,
so
and
good.
It's kind of the same kind of style playing as the riff on, like, Someday, and they do that kind of, you know, bottom of guitar thing really, really well. Yeah, I also love I love the demo version, I'll Try Anything Once, which is just a kind of really slowed down, kind of tender Julian vocal, and it has, I think, Nick on, like, electric kind of piano or organ, and it's just, it's very similar in ways, but it's a total different mood.
Flashing back to, like, 3:30 a.m., 4 a.m. nights in your gaff and leak slip when you've definitely thrown that on.
Oh, yeah, I'd say
hey,
so.
Hey, Dave, listen to this.
Listen to this, mate.
Pizza in the
it'll
oven.
Change your
Strokes
life.
Strokes on the radio.
I'm guessing that you're a bit of a Stroke stan.
I like them quite a lot.
I like them quite a lot.
Is this it arrived right when I, like, turned 13 and I was just like, yeah, this is my band. Like, I was already into music, but it was more bygone-y stuff.
Yeah.
And this was the first, oh, this is happening right now. And
but
the enemy
you never,
you're talking
you
about
never
them.
Loved this album, though. Because I've had arguments with you about this album where, like, for a long time, and I will admit there was a bit of a contrarianness about me to be like, it's the best album, mate.
No, I do love certain aspects of it. I think there's great songs on it. It is a bit bloated.
It's definitely bloated, yeah. And I think it's difficult to go back to, and I did find myself kind of, like, you know, dropping the kind of act for a while, and I was like, ah, oh, like, you know, it's not as good as I wish it was. And
but there's maybe
there's some great moments on it.
Three tunes that are a bit like, oh, you could have dropped those. The rest are all really good, like.
Yeah, I mean, like, Eyes of the World is a fucking amazing song.
Yeah.
And it has its moments, but, like, it definitely, obviously, you know, you guys both make the point of, like, Room on Fire giving you more of the same, but also, you know, kind of changing it up a little bit. This album definitely had a lot of people be like, oh no. Like,
oh no, you've gone too far.
Yeah, this is not the Strokes.
Which is funny, because listening to all of the Strokes' work now, I feel like they're one of the most consistent bands that have ever existed. Like, really, they didn't do a whole lot of switching. Like, you know, throwing out the rule book to
was,
my ears.
Yeah, there was never anything like crazy wild or avant-garde. Or yeah, it was all just like listenable guitar rock.
Like
with
at any point,
shades of that,
put any of their songs on and everyone in the room would be able to identify the band.
Yeah.
No matter
definitely.
How obscure
yeah,
the song,
yeah.
Which you can say about loads of bands.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah, definitely a distinct identity. But we'll go back to that first album for our fifth song on the list, Trying Your Luck. Five, you mentioned melancholy. I love the melancholy of this, and it's that attractive melancholy where you're like, this is actually,
yeah, you want to dive into
it's
it
unbelievable.
Like, it's yeah, it's a great melody.
So
every song on this album, I mean, I think we purposely maybe or even subconsciously were just probably steering clear of naming every track on the first couple of records, because you want to, you know, you want to spread it around a bit, but yeah, this is brilliant, and I kind of find it hard to single out all of those tracks, because I usually, once I start listening to Is This It, I just listen the whole way through.
Yeah, I had that experience there when like it turned 15 a while ago, and I went back to it and I was like, oh, actually, hang on, like this is genuinely worth the hype. This is genuinely worth all the think pieces that are coming out now. I've yet to read Meet Me in the Bathroom. Has anybody read that yet?
No.
No, I still haven't got around to it, which is shocking. No, I had to cancel the thing. It was a whole thing.
Speaking of things that you've ordered, has your Frank Ocean vinyl arrived?
No sign of it. No sign of
no
it.
No email updates. Nothing.
Before hurry up, Christmas. Frank.
I know, yeah.
Craig's not happy. Like, you don't want to know what he's going to do to us.
It's not like he's like notoriously unreliable or anything. Yeah. But no, I love this song. And again, to go back to my brother-in-law, Ben, a shout out. I know you don't listen to the podcast, but there's your shout out. And he was just like so taken by the simplicity of it, the minimalism of it. Even like, you know, like Fab Moretti's like one flourish, his one kind of tom drum fill, which arrives in the middle of it. But it's so commanding. And Julian is backed up at every point by a rhythm section and a guitar line that just hovers over him. And then he almost like grabs it by the throat and just stands over it and is like, nah, man, I'm in a shit mood. Here's my song. Yeah. It's so good.
Yeah.
Reminds me a bit of the Arctic Monkeys as well. The way they would do that thing where they would have an album full of, you know, floor fillers, and then there'd be one devastating song like 505 and you'd be like, oh man, I wasn't ready.
Sure.
Yeah. I wasn't mentally prepared for this.
A Certain Romance on the first album, which is like I think is their best song. Like, I think it's like that incredible, like, where did you guys get this from? Yeah, it's as you say, it's a knockout. But up next at number four, I believe this is your number one, Selena.
I love this one.
Do you want to introduce it?
Oh yes, it's Juice Box. Standing in the light field, standing in the light field, waiting for some action, waiting for some action. No, but why won't you come over here? Why won't you come over here? We got a city to love. Why won't you come over here? We got a city to love. Oh, time.
All right, so why is this the best Stroke song for you?
For me, it's because I think it's the best representation of my favourite thing about the Strokes, which is that I think they're very good at marrying like hard and soft. And I think that does this really well. And it swerves from really like chargy, energetic, stompy thing to something quite melodic and sweet and back again.
Yeah.
That's why it's my fave.
And it's like, it's a song of just very different parts that are all just catchy as hell. It builds really well. I think this is when they started sounding a bit like, oh, they were kind of wearing their goofier influences on their sleeves. Like, they became slightly less like cool and breezy Strokes at this point. But I love it just all the more because of that. It has that kind of bass line that is very, very 80s. It's actually, what is it like? It's what am I thinking of? It's some, like, it's very close to
Talking Heads or?
No, it'll come to me. But it's a great song.
It's a song that's like out of control from the very, very start of it. And yet, of course, you know, has that studio sheen. And it's just, it's so breakneck. It's so fast.
Is it Peter going? Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
Maybe.
Yeah, I feel
possibly.
Like
it's being... But it's weird. It's like a song in search of, like, a party. Like, it's that weird thing where, like, you can imagine Julian Casablancas bounding into fucking living rooms and or, like, pubs and just, like, screaming.
Yeah, it was so exciting when it came out. It was their biggest hit ever in the States, I think.
Is that right?
Wow.
Number 98 on the Billboard 100.
Oh,
they never
God.
Quite got too huge in their home country. But, yeah.
That's so strange that, like, they were such a zeitgeist band and then, you know, didn't have the numbers.
Yeah, it's an odd one, all right. More of a cult thing.
All right, well, you said earlier on that this should have been, potentially, the lead single off album number two. It's Reptilia! He seemed impressed by the way you came in. Tell us the story. I know you're not boring. I was afraid that you would not insist. You sound so sweet. And again, to go back to Selena's point about, like, you know, a distinct identity and hearing it once and being like, yeah, I know who that is. And I know that it's so confident and it's its own thing. And, like, I think it's the kind of song you can't really replicate. It's just fucking, it's such a great standalone.
It's all energy. It's just surging. It's, reminds me guitar-wise a little bit of Richie Blackmore's kind of stuff, that just like dead ahead thing. But one of the things I love most about the Strokes is how the two guitarists have such different styles. It's not your rhythm guitarist and your lead guitarist, it's both of them just kind of diving off each other at the same time, and just like some really complex, just intertwining things that are happening here. And like the video for it is great because you're just seeing close-ups of them going through all their parts, and it just feels like, oh, they're constructing something bigger than themselves. This is amazing. I like the Strokes.
You do like the Strokes. I mean, like, is it fun to go back to these songs and like kind of live outside yourself and not catch yourself in those moments? Because I feel like this band for you, I think, are very much like, as you said, you know, like, you know, you can recall being where you were. But like, is it possible for Reptilia to hold up like in 2018 as its own thing?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
It's not just tied to an era.
No, I don't think so. I don't think it's a nostalgia thing. Like, but Reptilia in particular wouldn't exactly remind me of like fond times or anything like that. I don't have it linked. Do you know what I mean? I don't have it linked specifically to here was the period I was listening to that. That'd be more of the first album. But yeah, I mean, it's just, it totally stands up. It even stands up to kind of covers from like bluegrass banjo bands and stuff as well.
I can't say I've ever experienced those. Is there one in particular that I should be aware of?
There's a few which I can direct you to, but not right now. I can't think of a name off the top of my head, but yeah.
All right, at number two. It's Last Night, because of course it is.
Yeah, this is my favourite one. Yeah,
that's my contribution. This is what an absolute banger.
The first Stroke song I heard, and I listened to it about 20 times in a row the first night. And yeah, I mean, it's kicking off with
fun.
It's kicking off with a bit of Tom Petty, American Girl, but it's got a kind of great swing to it. The solo's brilliant, like Julian's voice. I think that is like his peak, where he's just doing that ragged thing he doesn't quite do anymore. And yeah, it's fantastic. Is it the best, you know, written Stroke song? Is it their best work? I don't know if it is, but it's kind of like that first hit. And that's why it's there for me. It's my number one.
Well, you mentioned like the video to Reptilia, but like the video to this was like, you know, again, it was like, I was in school and it was like fucking Q, the channel on Sky. Mm-hmm. And I saw it at like 4 o'clock in the day or whatever it was. And again, I don't know, obviously the video is so well done. It's so well choreographed and presented and everything. But like, it's so strange to see a band so fully formed. And again, I think you're right. I think the Arctic Monkeys thing, even like, I bet you look good on the dance floor, that video as well. It has the same thing, you know, the live performance on a set. And yet there's something bigger going on here. There's like a certain sheen. There's a whoever like dressed them or dressed the set or whatever it is.
I think they dressed themselves.
It all just like matched. Everything matched everything else. You know, like the fact that Julian is like shoving the mic stand over.
Yeah.
You know, that was what people wanted at the time. There wasn't, like in 2001, 2002, there wasn't that kind of angst on.
Yeah.
Like, what are you talking about? You're talking about like a shanty in Jeruel. Like, there wasn't that kind of like, I'm annoyed and I'm also sexy kind of vibe going on with any bands that I can think of.
I think you wanted to hang out with them.
My favorite bit is when he shoves into Albert Hammond Jr.
Yeah.
Who like pushes himself back into, because he's like, I'm not breaking this guitar line, mate.
Yeah. Like, poor Albert, just like, it was never let do his thing. He was always being shoved or
But also like the drums. I mean, like Fabrizio Moretti, he like, his drumming on that first album is so basic to the point where you're like, man, are you just learning the drums? But it's fine. I mean, like, you can actually like, hear over the course of the album, especially by the time you get something like Juicebox, he's like, oh yeah, now he can do this. And it's interesting because, I mean, I guess it's like, it's that White Stripes thing of like, they didn't need to do any more than they were doing. But I just get the feeling that like, he was like learning the drums in those recording sessions. Because this is the most basic beat in the world. But it totally works.
It has that kind of primal, like elemental rock and roll thing that you go back to all the standards of like Wild Thing and whatever. It's just like bare bones, super simple, and it's all about the energy and the delivery, I guess.
Yep, you gotta be good to get away with it. And it's not even our number one though.
No.
I'm sure you can guess what it is. Here it is.
This place is
So last night I was talking to a friend of mine, and I was and she said,
nicely done, Clay.
And I said, I was like, hard to explain as an all-timer, right? Like, it really is. It's fucking flawless. It's got such energy, it's got such drive, it's got such verb, it's got such life. It's like a New Order song on coke. But no, it's fucking
New Order on coke.
I'm doing my voice thing. I just
feel like New Order is New Order on coke, but
yeah,
anyway.
Probably true. But like, I feel like this is like, you know, the kind of like the son of True Faith or something. There's just something in the song where like it has such an alchemy and such an amazing sense of like time and place and world building while also being a straight up incredible rock song. But again, it's got that signature Julian Casablancas melancholy as well.
It does. Yeah, I like, you know, I can keep talking about last night, but hard to explain could be their like objectively best written thing. It's like, I think it might be the best thing he's ever come up with as a finished product. You know, it's just, it's masterful. The chorus is sensational. I love that kind of chugging, just, it's like the band are like this train just running ahead. Not like the band train, but a train.
That'll be next month's listening.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, yeah, it's that kind of, it's that sadness about like existence, but it's also really, I don't know, makes you want to live.
It's good going that these songs still feel kind of exciting. You still get a little thrill listening to them all this time later. And I know I mentioned, you know, the time earlier, but at this point I have to bring up my favourite Strokes fact, which is that my hairdresser was the first person to interview the Strokes on television.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Boom. Shout out to Darren.
Where was this done for? Like, what was...
He worked at the time in Trouble Television. Right, remember?
Yeah, yeah.
He used to run like Sister Sister and stuff with Alexis Petridis?
Petridis, yeah.
Yeah.
Craig's boy.
Who now writes for The Guardian.
Yes.
And yeah, he actually described to me like getting, I think it was the Modern Age EP in, and just everyone, like back in the days where like people were paid to review music. and everyone in the office getting the EP in and like someone throwing it on and them all being so excited and like instantly loving it, instantly playing it on a loop for like 3 hours, you know. And I think, not that it was, the Strokes were so different from anything that came before, of course they weren't, but they came completely at the right time.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that EP, it was like the opening 20 seconds of The Modern Age was played and the record label just like, sign those boys up.
Yeah.
Like, they literally didn't even get to the chorus of the first song and they're like, yep, that's the sound we've been looking for.
Wow.
It was party music, but it was party music that you were allowed to like, and that it was cool to like, and that a thinking man could conceivably like, and it was socially acceptable.
Yeah, and hard to explain. I think, you know, it was a great summation of all that, and it's just like, it was all the promise and all the potential and all the poise and all the poignancy of the Strokes, and I love it.
Very well done.
And I'm very, very glad. Thanks, man. I've had three beers. I'm very, very glad that it's our number one, and that does it for our listening guide, and there'll be another one quite soon. But up next, it's our Songs of the Week, and we're going to do 6 songs this week, because I assumed it would be a smaller episode, but I feel like I've rambled, so who knows if it isn't. Nonetheless, Selena Murphy, as our guest, can I have a number between 1 and 5, please?
4.
All right.
4, Dave!
Okay, it's Snail Mail making her No Encore debut. The song is called Pristine. So last week on the show, we talked very briefly about the Soccer Mommy album, and I was saying I think it's quite good, and Craig was like, it's not bad, and ultimately, you know, through further listening and conversations, I'm like, yeah, I mean, like, it's definitely really good, but it's definitely lacking in a certain amount of depth here and there, and maybe guilty of repetitiveness. I kind of got from this song the best aspects of the album. I love this song. I think it's got that same kind of weird, like, very American, very kind of like, you know, small town bar and like possibly playing in front of 25 people who aren't really listening or caring, but there might be one person there who is and who does, and it just has all these layers and all these kind of human little details, and her voice is fantastic, and this song really, really worked for me.
Yeah, she was born in 1999, which is really scary.
It's terrifying.
It's a great guitar rock song about like jaded youth and just being bored at like various house parties. And for that reason, I think they should bring back The OC on Netflix so this can be in the soundtrack. Yeah, no, I totally agree with what you're saying in comparison with Soccer Mommy. It has kind of that 90s like slacker generation, Gen X thing going on to it. It's like got a bit of irony to it and a bit of Spike as opposed to people just being, you know, very emotional and very sincere. There's a lot of kind of character here and the hooks are great.
I'm convinced this is going to be on some Judd Apatow project.
Yeah.
In the near future. Yeah, I really liked it as well. I just really fell for her immediately. Like, she has a real knack for expressing emotion and making it feel genuine. And I wanted to know more about her and know, like, what part are you talking about? Like, who's this guy? You know, yeah. She really drew me in. And she did stir up those feelings of, I hasten to say, teenage angst, maybe teenage frustration. In me with this song, and yeah, I thought it was really well done.
It feels genuine. Like, I mean, I think like that's something where it's, I saw it on Pitchfork and they were like, you know, best new track, and every now and then I check those out and I often find myself being like, really, this? But I gave it a go and I was like, yeah, hang on, this is immediate. Like, I mean, like, it's totally immediate. And in this kind of, you know, something I was talking about that panel today where it's like, again, we say it all the time and I'm wary of becoming a broken record, but like, you only have so much time in your week and like, you got to really prioritize, and ultimately sometimes you find yourself playing catch up and a song really needs to hit you fast, and this did. I think this hit me in a way that Hatchie song hit Cullum around Christmas time. Yeah. And I love that song too, but it's obviously a much more shoegazy pop song. But yeah, I mean, again, I mean, like, to have that level of command, you know, I didn't realize actually she was as young as she is.
18.
Yeah.
And now I feel particularly old, but like, fuck me, really? 18? And she's like, this is, yeah, this feels so,
bodes really well.
But it feels, it feels so,
it's very like
lived
competent
in
and well formed, and there's no dodgy bits. Yeah, at all.
Yeah, and it ends like really abruptly on the drums, as like all, you know, proper songs should, not just this kind of like fade out, cop out. Yeah. Yeah, it's like a proper, and that's the end of that song, and what a song.
You might say it's pristine. Can I have a number, please, Craig?
Can I have number one, please, Dave?
You can, man. It's the return of Irish rock collective Fan Club. The song is called All Fall Down. A couple weeks ago, after the Choice Prize, I went to a Universal Music Ireland kind of sizzle reel situation where I was handed a beer on my hangover and I was treated to a cinematic experience of all their upcoming music and stuff, and they played the first kind of 2 minutes of this, I guess, and in the first like 10 seconds I turned to the person next to me and I went, this already sounds better than anything on their debut album.
I agree.
And it's interesting because that debut album like was pretty much recorded when they were picked up by Universal, so they didn't actually put any kind of extra production oomph on it, apart from maybe one or two tracks. At least that's what I've been told. If I'm wrong, let me know. NoEncore@headstuff.org or @NoEncoreShow on Twitter.
Sure.
So, I mean, Teenage Dave would adore this because it's a combination of like bands like Vex Red and then, you know, Muse before they were horrendous. I mean, it's this band, I wonder if they're always going to suffer from a depth problem, but at the same time, this is so commanding and fun and really well produced, sounds amazing.
Yeah.
It's huge. Maybe it doesn't need to do any more than it's doing.
Yeah, I like the kind of dynamic range on it. It has that kind of terrific low end, and I think it has some gorgeous kind of little guitar maneuvers that it just slides so expertly in and out of. And I agree, this is probably the, you know, most sophisticated thing they've put out. It's certainly the thing that gripped me the most, and they were already showing kind of big promise, as I constantly say about artists on this show. But yeah, lots of promise here, check them out later. But yeah, I feel like they might be a bit like ghettoized in terms of that sound and in terms of the reference points and whether they can actually command a big audience with this kind of aesthetic is probably open to interpretation, but there'll certainly be a live draw for years to come if they keep like banging out songs like this.
This didn't grab me at all. I'm afraid. Sauce lads. No, it's very clearly like a very effective song and a well-constructed song. They're very nifty on their guitars. I had an issue with the vocals. I found them to be like too far away from me, to the point where I felt like I was in the car with my mam and she hadn't turned up the volume on the car radio enough. And I did test it with like different headphones to be like, is this just like my phone? Is my phone terrible? That bugged me.
Okay.
I felt like I couldn't latch on to what was going on with the vocals. Not really my bag, but like they've made a good song.
Yeah,
for
I mean,
sure.
Like, I think, you know, vocally is another issue that they may need to look at. And I think, you know, they kind of moved slightly away from the more grungy elements of their debut album and more into almost, you know, kind of stadium-friendly Biffy Clyro territory here and there.
Mm.
And I think, you know, I don't know what's coming, if there's a new EP or if they're going to put out another album pretty quickly. That could very well be the case. If they do put out either, I think if this is the opening track, I think it's a good way of grabbing you, even if it didn't quite grab you by the jugular.
It was never going to grab me. It's not my niche. Like,
it's not wedding playlist friendly.
No.
Fair enough.
Yeah, maybe the vocals do need a bit more oomph or just kind of like...
You're backtracking now.
Now that, like, it's, yeah.
He's listening.
I don't know. I think I said that about
the
debut, didn't
I? I think that's what it was for me, that I found I just wanted to hear it be the vocals be more confident.
It doesn't match the power of what's going on around it.
There's probably just an imbalance rather than the vocals.
It's funny because I was going to make the point during the Strokes Listening Guide that, like, you know, some of the songs, some of their better songs is like, it's almost like Julian Casablancas. You mentioned that kind of almost angsty thing of, like, you know, pushing into people and whatever. It's almost like Julian Casablancas is like walking down a street and you're trying to catch up with him. Like, you're, whether you're like his mate or something, and he's like, fuck off, man. And I think in this situation, the fan club vocalist is almost like trying a little bit too hard to be like that kind of aloof guy, that kind of like mysterious, I'm under the covers here, while I'm being dwarfed in this instance by massive production.
Yeah.
Which,
maybe
the disparity may be there. But, you know, to be fair, I will say I found this a very enjoyable repeat song, even if, again, there's not really much going on behind the eyes. Up next, Sina, can I have a number, please?
Two
you can have. Yep, it's Sigrid, who is the next big thing apparently. This song is called Raw.
Be a role. Keeping up appearances, but sometimes all one needs a little break. Sometimes all one needs a little break. Regret the stupid shit I say. I hope that you'll forgive me any day. No, I could never fake it. No. Like players always playing.
I believe she was the BBC Sound of 2018.
Yeah.
Or something.
How has that been panning out the last kind of couple of years in terms of...
Sound of?
Yeah.
I haven't paid attention. Have you done a thing here?
No, not really. But that's why I'm thinking, because it doesn't seem to have the kind of cachet at once.
Did it ever have cachet?
I don't know.
Like,
you would at least
know.
Hear about it to a large extent, and then...
Did you though?
Like, feel like people were let down.
It feels like a very Music Week industry focused thing, doesn't it?
I think it's good for the artists because they automatically get to go on like all the morning shows in Britain and stuff like that. They get a lot of bookings out of it.
Well, she was on Graham Norton recently and she did her song Strangers.
Seen her on tons of shows.
Did you see that performance?
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
She's cool.
Strangers is great. It reminded me a bit of Maggie Rogers. Like, she's got a lot of cool ideas in one artist.
I'll be going to see her hours after this podcast drops in a sold out show in the Academy. Can't imagine she's going to be in the Academy size venues for very longer.
No.
She seems to be like a huge deal. I think she's on the Picnic bill. I could have got that wrong.
Yes, but, I believe so.
I like her. I think she's got something. And it's that kind of weird... Cullum's very upset this week that we've kind of gone Scandinavian with him away. But nonetheless, it had to happen. I like the song quite a lot. And again... You talk about personality. I think she has one. I think it shines through in her vocals and in her lyrics and in her delivery.
Yeah, I mean, with the opening, I was thinking, okay, where's this going? Is it going to end up being a bit irksome or the right side of quirky? And then that kind of bassy stomp comes in and those like piano stabs and just the whole kind of treatment of that melody is really well done, and it takes it somewhere else and it kind of gets it away from that thing. And the vocals are, great. That kind of scrunched up, contorted thing. I've heard a lot of her kind of covers. She's done some Leonard Cohen stuff and they're quite different and a bit more kind of pacified, but this was just full of energy.
I like her, but I didn't like this song particularly. It felt a little bit dull to me, and she's to me, she's not a dull artist at all. She's got really cool ideas. I like her little vocal gymnastics that she does. They're always interesting. Yeah, I think maybe for me, this just isn't as comfortable a place for her as Strangers, where there's a lot of production. It's very up and fun and there's a lot going on and she's getting to be playful. I thought this was a little bit, like some of her personality was lost.
Well, it's called Raw. One. I mean, like, is it guilty of playing too much to, like, trying to be that? Like, is it trying to be like, this is now my vulnerable song?
Oh, it probably completely set out or achieved what she set out to do with it. And it wouldn't put me off listening to more of her at all. It's just definitely one that I would be skipping if I was listening to her.
I do feel like that subject matter can often stray into, like, oh, this is, like, impairing anthemic kind of thing, which is a bit cliched. But I think she manages to avoid it with this. So, yeah, I liked it.
Yeah, I liked it. I mean, like, I will agree that I think Strangers was definitely the more kind of immediate pop banger. But, like, I liked it. I mean, I think it did show sides of her personality. But, again, it's that kind of weird nascent period, I suppose, for her. And it's like, who's the real Sigrid? Is it going to be more of this? Or is it going to be more of Strangers? Or is it going to be, you know, an amalgam of both, and will that be a mess?
And I will listen to all of it.
Oh yeah, yeah, I'm on board.
I'm open to things. I like Bjork.
That's true. Yep.
Science. And I'm neurotic.
Science
so.
Has a. And I'm. Not, and I'm disagreeable. So. 3, 5, or 6, Craig?
5, please, Dave.
All right. Yeah. It's a cover. It's Q-Tip and Demi Lovato with "Don't Go Breaking My Heart." Elton John and Kiki D classic. Have they managed to do it justice?
What's happening? Like, what is this?
I know, right?
I love Elton.
Yeah.
Love Kiki. Love Demi. Love Q-Tip. Like, couldn't comprehend this at all. Like, I kept waiting for Q-Tip to do a verse and didn't happen. And he's kind of talk singing, right? I couldn't say he was singing.
Yeah, his decision making was odd on this, and I'd say.
As a singer, he doesn't sound good. Mm. Demi Lovato, actually, I think her voice suits this song very well, very powerful.
She sounds Skyped in, though, doesn't she? Like, it's weird.
She
like,
probably it was.
I don't know. I really like her, so I liked her vocal on this, and I didn't get that feeling at all. Didn't mind the production, like the kind of trying to turn it into a slow jam.
Yeah,
I was on
liked
board with
Q-Tip's
that
production. Like it was an interesting way to take it, and it kind of stops it just being like, oh, here's this song you've heard a million times before.
Yeah.
But
I think
his
vocal ruined it.
Yeah, probably did. This is an entire album of kind of Elton John and Bernie Taupin songs reimagined,
like, revamped.
Meanwhile, this isn't even a song written by them. I think this was a cover initially anyway, so it's a bit of a strange one. But yeah, I can't wait for the Coldplay stuff and the Florence stuff, and I'm not going to get this album.
Is Florence in there?
Yeah, I think Mumford and Sons doing Elton John. Do you want to?
I heard Florence and the Machine's new single there at that same Universal thing, and you know I'm not allowed to talk about it, but I'll just say you've heard it before.
Oh god, like,
yeah. That's disappointing.
It really is. I mean, I don't know what it is about Florence. She's clearly amazing, but like, there's just a certain baseline level. As for this, though, yeah, I mean, I kept waiting to be charmed. And then it just didn't happen.
I feel like you're always waiting to be charmed.
Well, to be fair.
Constantly let down.
You are disagreeable.
That is my life burden,
yes.
Craig. I keep waiting for that spark. And
I don't feel like I criticize covers as heavily because I'm always like,
curio.
These two people just got together and maybe had a couple of drinks and went, you know what we should do is do this cover,
yeah,
whatever.
That's fair.
But even still, I'm disappointed and I will not be listening to this again.
Okay, you got 2 numbers left, 3 and 6.
Let's go for 6.
All right. Okay. So I saw the name before I heard the song and I thought, why not? Especially with, you know, Selena's pop music background. It's X Factor sensation, Matt Cardle.
Desire. 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 Set fire and burn us to
I like the kind of really high note he ends on. It's like the kind of...
Do you?
Yeah, it's like the, that's my favourite part.
The song was called Desire, and I mean, I was just stunned that he was still a thing. I'm amazed. What's going on? It's 2018. It's been like 6 or 8 years since he's...
Is he on a major label?
He was, yeah. And I'm pretty sure...
He's back with Sony now.
Is he?
I'm assuming he is with this because it sounds very glossy.
I did find it in my Spotify, you know, New Music Friday. So I was like, what the hell? But also, his whole thing was, you know, I'm not going to play by your rules, Simon Cowell. And Simon Cowell was like, see you then. And then that was it. And now he's back somehow.
I think he talked about how he wanted to go away and just recharge, and he was working on stuff for a long time that was very electronic sounding. I don't know if he meant this. I mean, he has like, you know, that kind of technically good passable voice thing going on, but I hate this
don't
song.
We all? Like, yeah. You hate this song?
Yeah.
Okay, tell me why.
It just does absolutely nothing for me. Maybe hate is too strong a word. But
it's a bit much, though, isn't it?
It's irritating.
Yeah, it is irritating. Yeah. It's very much like that kind of like that chorus delivery feels like a Hurts song, except like a bad remix of a bad Hurts song. And it's that kind of like, you know, it's like, look how emotional I am.
Yeah. You can kind of hear the cogs turning in. Oh, this is what we're going for. It seems
you can see the
calculated.
Songwriting session, though, yes, like, with, yeah, like, you know, like the guy from Gomez and Brezzy or whoever the fuck, you know, is currently lining the halls of whatever record label. I mean, like, yeah, it's just, I mean, it's really, really strange. I just found it more, yeah, I the more I listened to it, I was like, oh my God, man, really? Like, shut up.
Wow, that's a pretty strong response there. I didn't hate this.
We are known for
at all.
Not agreeable, so.
I didn't love it, but I thought it was somewhat interesting because you see X Factor winner on their fourth album and you think this is going to be the most formulaic that music can possibly be. But in fairness to him, he I don't know if it's him or his label or the people he's working with, but he is trying something a little bit different with the like extreme falsetto and the 90s like whooshy production.
Sure.
So I have to give him props for trying something slightly different. I think there needs to be a music video where he's walking in the rain. For sure.
I'm sure it's already being filmed.
Rain South Beach, I would say.
It's premiering as I speak. I mean, fair play to him for trying something different is what I think. I'm not loving the song, but I wouldn't be adverse to hearing more.
All right. Well, there you go. If I've done nothing else, I've given him a career boost by, you know, putting him on someone's radar.
Oh, yeah. Very much so, yeah.
Finally this week, they've just announced their first gigs since the end of 2013. They're doing an Irish tour. They are, of course, the lads, Snow Patrol.
It'll fall in love with the way things were. It'll fuck up your mind. It'll fuck up your mind. But this is all on the wings of others. I loved you more, more in your own flight. So it say, it won't be lost forever. It won't be lost forever. Don't give in. Don't you dare quit so easy.
The song is called Don't Give In, and it's a bit of a mess, isn't it?
Well, I just couldn't really get around Gary Lightbody's vocal, which is just, it's like he has this very gritty thing going on. It's almost Springsteen-y. I didn't hate this at all.
Oh, I didn't dislike it. I just thought it was a little bit of a hodgepodge.
I like that kind of acoustic guitar kind of thing, just propelling it along. And it never, as I've kind of said about previous songs here, it never quite hit those cliched anthemic things it was going for. It had a bit of restraint, which I enjoyed. He's talked about going through a really rough time in the last few years and stuff, and this album that's coming up is very much about that. There's no kind of love songs or any of that thing. It's really about his kind of struggles with depression, and it felt more sincere than Snow Patrol had been in a lot of years, to my ears.
What about that gig that we went to?
Yeah, we had a fun time at that gig.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah. It was the backing screens were very Windows 95 screensaver.
Yeah.
We just had fun.
Yeah, we got drunk and took the piss out of it. Sina, what do you think of the song?
Not loving it. In my notes I wrote down, this is a Snow Patrol song that's about as nice as all of the other Snow Patrol songs, which I think sums it up pretty well. I found it to be pleasant. The melody's pleasant. There's the same kind of sense of momentum that they have in all their songs. That's about it. It kind of, other than that, it felt a bit wallpaperish to me. And I have to admit, I was multitasking this morning. And I was listening to this while I was working out, which I do not recommend. Because this came on while I was doing jumping lunges, and there is nothing as viscerally... there's nothing as awful as doing jumping lunges while listening to this. So I don't recommend that, even to Snow Patrol fans. But I think Snow Patrol fans will like this.
Yeah. What would you recommend doing jumping lunges to, though?
Ed Sheeran, Shape of You.
Are you still on that?
I'm still on it, a 1,000 years later.
Wow. To be fair, I mean, like, fair, but you've committed.
Not one spin for any other song on that album, but still like a bit of Shape of You.
Okay.
A bit of Demi Lovato, maybe, as well.
Okay. All right.
Good stuff. Cool for the summer, maybe. Yeah.
That's a good song. Yeah. I like that one.
I think it's been like 7 years since Snow Patrol kind of released something, right?
It's correct. Been a long time. The album Wildness is due out next month or May, I think.
Yeah. Are people going to be interested? They have a big fan base, right? They'll be fine.
No, absolutely. Yeah. And I will say this from working for Joe, which I do. I mean, like, Snow Patrol stories go down very fucking well.
Okay.
The general Irish public are very much chomping at the bit to get back into their Snow Patrol situation.
So, well, good for them.
Well, you know, it remains to be seen. I mean, like, you know, the album does sound intriguing, but like, I just wasn't really blown away by it. But then again, at the same time, maybe I should respect that a bit more. Like, it's not really an obvious single for a single.
Yeah, I think they're doing some more interesting stuff on this than they had on a lot of previous efforts, where they just very much kind of... they had the kind of success of Final Straw, which I liked a lot of stuff on, and from there it just seemed to be, oh, we're playing bigger venues, we're going to write songs for those bigger venues. It became very kind of homogenized and vanilla to me, and just, yeah.
Okay, real quick then, around the horn, if you have one, what's your favourite Snow Patrol song?
Run, maybe.
Seen it.
I wish I could remember which one it was, but me and my boyfriend once got a couples massage, and...
Is it by Gary Lifebody?
Oh, I wish. And we got out of the salon or the whatever, the spa of the hotel. And the first thing we said to each other was, I think I like Snow Patrol now. And it was, I still to this day don't know whether it was because I was in such, maybe getting a massage is the perfect time and place to be listening to Snow Patrol, because I was loving it.
Yeah, okay.
I was like, not moving because getting a massage, but like clicking along and like stomping my feet and my head to this. And then, yeah, I have not listened to them since. So I'm useless at this. Okay. Question, I'm sure
you have a favorite?
Yeah, I'll go with Somewhere a Clock is Ticking.
Oh, okay.
It's a great song. And I also really enjoy the first part of the three-part song known as The Lightning Strike. And I can't remember what... I think it's What If the Storm Ends?
Yeah.
They're brilliant songs. Like, and Run's great as well. It is fantastic. Yeah.
I never really knew their kind of early stuff, which I think everyone was just like... They were a very different band then. And I don't know, maybe I should have been more intrigued to kind of delve back in. But yeah.
Okay. Well, what about other things that you might have listened to this week?
I'm still on Young Fathers. I think it's a remarkable thing. Still listen to that a lot. I'm on a real REM buzz at the moment.
Is that because of that new podcast?
Yes, it is. yes, very much so. And also the fact that they're the greatest American band of all time.
Wow, that's a statement.
Yeah, it's a statement. It might be a fully true one, but I'm going to stick with it right now.
All right, see you now.
I've been listening to a guy called Quay. I don't know if you've heard of him. He doesn't seem to have gotten much like traction anywhere. He is the brother of Shingai Shaniwa from the Noisettes.
Oh, wow.
There's a fun fact.
Jesus.
He is a young Zimbabwean British dude, and he makes very, very fabulous, slightly funky, soulful pop. And if there's one song you need to listen to, it's a song called The Sweetest Life. And if you put it on and you watch the video, you will either immediately be living for this man. He's like voguing. He's doing dance moves. He's incredible. Or else you'll be like, this definitely isn't for me.
Right.
I've been loving him.
Craig and I will report back next week.
Yes.
I have
Please
been
with dance
to,
moves.
Always with dance moves, yeah.
I've been listening to the new De La Renta's album, True Surrender, which comes out at the end of April. And
signs are good.
Signs are very fucking good. Yeah, we'll be talking about that more in depth at some point. But yeah, it's very, very good. So that's the end of the show. Cena Murphy, thank you so much.
Thanks for having
Great
me.
Great to have you back.
I'll be back
always
again.
Welcome,
hopefully,
yeah.
If I haven't disgraced myself.
Always welcome. Although we must have Cullum involved at some point. So
no, we may never.
Yeah, it's a whole thing.
Cullum's being upset.
It's a thing now. It has to be a thing.
He thinks it's personal.
And, you know, never get those wedding tips.
As established, he doesn't show emotion very often. So I feel like we need to kind of respect him.
Close shop.
But that's the show for this week. We'll be back next week, and we'll have another guest in because Craig's away next week.
I'm off to Krakow, yeah.
Why again?
Because I had holiday vouchers that were
running. Is it a stag do?
No, it's not. Wow. No, it's not. I had holiday vouchers that were, like, I didn't realise they were expiring so quickly, and there was basically nowhere else that was open to book, kind of thing. But I'll get to see Auschwitz, so that's booked, and the salt mines are supposed to be good.
Wow.
I don't know.
Krakow's lovely. I've been. You'll have a great
cool.
time.
Cool, great. I hear good things, so
okay.
I'll report back.
Do your best. Yeah, yeah. Give us a roving report.
Yeah.
Okay, Exit Music this week comes from Sorka Richardson. She's back with a really good song called Can't We Pretend. If you haven't heard her before, she's got one of the best vocals in the country, I would say. And I feel like she's going to step it up a notch this year. We'll see. But this song is fucking great. Cena and Craig, thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
My name is Dave Hanratty. This has been New Encore. There will be New Encore. And this is Sorka Richardson with Can't We Pretend. See you next week.
Summer, everybody's coming home, and now I'm lying in my old bedroom again on my own. Listen to the cars passing outside. Remember, Adam crashed his car into the tree, but somehow he survived. And the next night you walked me home. We've been drinking underage, and you said, do you think our parents know? We hid a bottle in the trees. Oh, we couldn't find it later. Guess the neighbor's getting drunk for free. No, we couldn't find it later. Guess the neighbor's getting drunk on me. Not that I don't miss you, I've just lived this distance for some time. I still think about that September night, sitting on an empty pier. Nobody will find us here. We were dreaming about where we both would go. You pointed out across the ocean. Oh, I wonder now if I had known. Hit that bottle in the trees. That we wouldn't find it later. Guess the neighbor's getting drunk for free. No, we wouldn't find it later. Guess the neighbor's getting drunk on me. You waved at me from the front door. I told you I be home for Christmas. I've been gone for 6 years more. You know I meant to call you back. Get so busy in this city, you expect me to keep track. It's raining in New York too. That doesn't mean I'm any closer to you. If I can't your friend, I don't need you to believe me, but can we still pretend? If I can't be your friend, I don't need you to forgive me. Oh, but can
This podcast is part of the Headstuff Podcast Network.
Introducing Peacock, the new free streaming service from NBC Universal. It's hit movies, current shows, live sports, trending bits, and timeless hits. And that's why you can't not watch. Peacock, watch for free, upgrade for more. Stream now at peacocktv.com. Law and Order SVU streaming now.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.